Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. It is a Wednesday afternoon, kind of gloomy. But again, every Wednesday, we just cheer up. We all get happier when Terry Savage joins us. Welcome back, Terry.
I am glad to be here.
Okay, look out the window. You see what's happening out there? If you need a sign that you're going to be okay through the window, through the winter, this is the day they're out. They're planting the tulip bulbs.
Oh, they're planting the tulip bulbs for next spring. That's how you should invest.
That's right.
That's exactly my investment philosophy.
Well, thanks for coming by. I was glad I could take care of that for you.
Okay, we're done.
All right, got a few things. Let's start with that. We thought we were going to be talking about the Republican tax plan today. They said that they were going to unveil it. We were going to get the details. And then apparently there are some disagreements among Republicans. They're saying that it's about the fine. They're going through it with sort of a fine-tooth comb and some of the smaller things they've got issues with. But
they're
the fact
not small
is
things that
they've
they have
set another deadline and they haven't met it.
Oh, well, the market doesn't really mind. The market was up over 100, now up 25. The market senses that while everything else flopped, the one thing Congress might get its act together on is tax reform. Now, there are some very sticky things, and they don't just break down between Republican and Democrat. One is the deductibility of both property taxes and state and local income taxes.
And Brady said yesterday again they were going to keep that. They were going to stick with it.
Well, there was a the discussion is, okay, we'll let everybody deduct property taxes. Rich people have bigger houses, more property taxes. Not all states have income taxes. In fact, typically Democratic states, you would think, have, you know, state income taxes just the way it's working out. Mm-hmm. But there are a lot of representatives in Congress from Democratic states that have constituencies that are Republican and want to get deduct those state income taxes. So that's, I think, going to be the biggest one that I'm most interested in to see how they work out.
You're not worried at all the fact that they set this today was going to be, I mean, even yesterday they were saying they were going to announce.
The worst thing that should come out of Washington is that they miss a deadline by one day.
Okay.
And the president is leaving, and he's leaving, he said, he's leaving Mnuchin and Gary Cohn in charge.
And Ivanka Trump.
And Ivanka, right. What could go wrong?
Okay. Let me try one more time. So they have had trouble in the past among themselves coming up with something that they could support as a party. You're not worried this is a sign?
But they had that with
healthcare.
They had that with
and they didn't get it passed. That's my point.
No, I actually think, well, it doesn't matter what I think.
No, it
does. It's what the market thinks. And the market is telling you at this moment that it thinks there will be some tax bill passed. Now, I want to say this again, and I'm going to add another little piece to it. Cutting taxes, first of all, you have to cut taxes on the people who pay them, which tends to be the upper income people. So, yeah, it looks like a tax cut on the rich. But remember, I always say to you, there's
well,
a quiz
it
again.
Is,
you know the answer by now, but I'm going to give you a part B. Who was the biggest tax cutter of the 20th century?
John F. Kennedy.
Right, and he was a Democrat. It wasn't Reagan. It was Kennedy who cut the top tax rate from 90% to 70%, the corporate rate from 52 to 48. But as I was doing some reading the other day, I thought, you know, there was another great Democratic tax cutter in the 20th century. You know who that was?
Who?
It was Bill Clinton.
Okay.
And he cut the capital gains tax rate from 28% to 20%. Now, you saw an immediate reaction. All those people who think people's behavior doesn't change when they pay lower taxes, this was after the decade of the 90s. People had a lot of capital gains. They hesitated to take them and pay, you know, 28% in taxes. When they cut the tax rate to 20%, which is basically on shareholders who you might define as rich people. I think it's all of our 401k plans, but they don't pay capital gains. So they cut the Democrats under Clinton worked with the Republicans, cut the top tax rate on capital gains to 20% from 28, and you had a gusher of capital gains tax revenue.
I don't want to devolve into
works.
I mean, I think I'm on board with you. I think we definitely
with that?
No, I'm
keep
on
that
board.
Because nobody else
I'm
will.
Not bored with it. I'm on board with it.
Oh,
we're
you're
on the
board.
Same team.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But here's the now I saw an article or someone was characterizing an article with an interview with Art Laffer. Who was the Laffer curve, right? The trickle-down economics guy, right?
Do you know we dated in the 1980s?
Well, I wasn't going to bring
it
up.
That?
No, I did. I know.
And well, that's where I learned my supply-side economics, everyone. And by the way, every year the executive club has an economic—
You just gave me such a look. I wasn't going to say that.
Well, I thought you would, so okay. I figured in truth and truth— I had to be truthful and upfront. In January. The executive club, remember every year we have that economic forecast luncheon with Diane Swonk and Dr. Bob Frelick and what we will call the wild card guest. I am telling you now, I don't think they've announced it. Our third guest, the star in it.
Is Art Laffer.
Is Art Laffer. Dr.
Okay,
Art
so, but here's the characterization.
Executivesclub.org. Make your reservations
okay,
early.
So he was the trickle-down guy, right? And he said,
no!
Well, let me just finish.
Trickle-down, he was the rising tide guy.
Okay, but he was...
That's what Kennedy said, too.
But he was the guy who said you cut the high income tax rate.
He said that there's a curve. And of course, you know at the extremes what happens. You tax everybody's money away, you get the old Soviet Union, you get collapse. You tax nothing, and you don't have a nation because you can't protect people, you don't have courts, you don't have laws, you don't have the basic obligations to defend a nation with no taxes. But somewhere in between on that curve is the optimum point that both collects revenues and encourages people to work harder and earn more so that the economy grows and more revenues come in.
The point I'm trying
to
make, okay, the point I'm trying to make, and you find out if this, but this was a characterization I heard, is he said our income tax rates now are below the level that would make that effective.
Oh, no, he didn't say that. He said that if we would cut, I mean, I've been in touch with him by email for the last month since all this tax thing started. And I've read all his latest work. And I've, you know, don't be prejudiced again by labels. Don't be prejudiced by Laffer curve or Republicans, Democrats, or supply side. The fact of the matter is, if you're someone who's out there working, you and your spouse are making a nice salary, and someone says, I'm going to pay you overtime for this project. And you realize that by the time you pay the state taxes and the federal taxes, half of the next dollar you make goes to the government. You are likely to say to yourself, hey, you know, it's not worth it to me. And we're not at that point. The same thing, especially in the corporate tax rate. France is cutting its corporate tax rate.
I don't know if we're going to. I'm trying to get a guess. Was it the Wallet Hub or Glass? Someone just came out with a study of corporations and what they pay.
Well, and there are, of course, many corporations. Wallet Hub. Spend
have we got them booked, Bennett? Do we?
Wallet Hub. Great site. WalletHub.com.
Okay, we got a break.
But the fact is, many corporations pay zero taxes. But do you know how much they spend lobbying in Congress? Do you know how much more productive our economy could be if we had a low rate? The corporation said, why the heck bother with spending money on tax deals and tax evasions and lobbying? We'll just pay it and we'll spend the real money growing our business.
Okay, we're repeating ourselves. But what I was going to say was, I hope we can talk to Wallet Hub because they showed really that corporations are paying higher than I thought. So hopefully we'll talk to them sometime. The Dow Jones Industrial Average is at 17 points, so it has dropped a few points since Terry Savage started talking here about economics.
Yeah, but the market's holding up. Let's make one more point before we get to Medicare Part D drugs, which is really significant. And that is tomorrow the president says he'll name his choice for the new Fed chairman. And did not rule out Janet Yellen.
He said today, excellent.
Yeah, but
wouldn't
you know
say.
That's a kiss of death.
Right.
Whenever he says that's a great person or excellent, that's goodbye. So it's likely to be Fed Governor Jerome Powell, who I've met on a number of occasions, very impressive, or another economist Taylor, who is perceived to be more hawkish, would raise rates more quickly. But if Jerome Powell is likely to be named the next Fed chairman, he's already a governor, there's a sense that he would be moderate and gradual, and the market likes that idea.
Okay, so we're in the enrollment period now for Medicare.
Oh, this is
you've got
so
a column
important.
Up on terrysavage.com. Honest to God, you're a great writer, and I have a hard time understanding anything.
Okay, look. Seniors, and those of you who have mothers or grandmothers who are seniors and understand computers, please go to terrysavage.com and read the whole column. But basically, this
or
is now...
Or fathers.
Or fathers. Yeah. Or fathers, yes. This is open enrollment period for Medicare. Now, it's not for the original sign-up for Medicare. You can sign up whenever you turn 65. It's not so much for the supplements, though I write about that. You probably buy that immediately when you enroll in Medicare and likely don't change it. But everybody needs a Medicare prescription drug program. It's called Part D. You need it even if you don't take any drugs. And the plans change so much every year that even if you had 12 drugs or no drugs last year and you had a great plan, you must right now line up all your prescriptions and go to, I'm going to give you two places,
okay,
the Medicare.gov Part D Plan Finder. There's a link in this column at Terry Savage. where you put in privately your social, so you could do it without your social security number, you could do it with your zip code, and put in all your drugs. This is, I take 100 milligrams of this twice a day and so forth to get the dosages correct. And then it will tell you which is going to be the least expensive drug plan for you. And that includes a lot of things, like some pharmacies considered will switch a generic. Some pharmacies have different tiers for which they will pay. Only a computer. Now, if, like me, you are scared of, oh my goodness, how can we do this? There is another website. It's called ehealthmedicare.com. ehealthmedicare.com will help you find, you can talk to them on the phone, so you can go there and then call. They will help you do the same process. They don't get any commissions.
So is that the way you should choose one, is by the existing?
The only way. Don't go walk in and say, it's the Walgreens plan, and I love Walgreens because it's nearby.
Right.
Because they may charge more for a certain drug, even though they're less expensive for other things.
Okay, let me ask you this, though.
Don't just fall for the ads. Do the comparison online. That's what I'm trying to say.
But you should definitely choose by the drugs you're already prescribed. I mean, my question is, are there plans that are sort of, should more things come up?
No, yeah, you'd be better served. If you have to take new meds in June next year, you're going to have to do it within the plan you've chosen, and it may not be the most efficient thing for that plan, but that's why you have to do it every year. The rule: review your drugs, even your no drug plan. You are likely to save a lot of money. Medicare.gov or ehealthmedicare.com. Do it. Believe me, I'm just betting. I want to hear from everybody. You can post up at terrysavage.com on my blog. Just send me a post that said, you don't have to put your name in there, you know, I'm glad I did it because I saved X dollars over last year, or what my last year's plan would be charging me this year.
Why is it so hard?
Because they want seniors to be so frustrated.
I mean, really?
I have amazing the kinds of twists and turns in both Medicare, Medicare supplements, the choice of Medicare traditional or advantage plans, which include prescription drugs, but also limit you to the doctors you can see. We force seniors to make such complex and important choices. What could be more important to a senior than knowing that you've got the right coverage and that you're not paying through the nose for it? I'm writing a series, by the way. You'll see them all up at terrysavage.com. And here's a tease for next week. Remember last year we talked about that small business health plan?
Yes.
Where if only two people were in a company, you could get the very best health insurance, better than you can get under Obamacare. I'm updating that, so you'll see, that's what we'll talk about next
week. Okay, tune in for that next week, because that really changed businesses. People had a real impact. So,
absolutely.
All right, that's coming up next Wednesday with Terry Savage. Glad you're there. Thanks very much for tuning in here on the program from noon to 1 each day. Frank Sennett is on a phone line. He is from Crane Chicago Business and joins us from time to time to talk about what they're writing there. Frank, the business lunch, the baseball season ends tonight. You're going to have so much more free time.
The Cubs are still the defending world champions.
They are. For just a few more hours, the Cubs are the world champions. Who's going to win tonight?
I think the Dodgers. I think that finally the quality of the pitching staff will assert itself. Otherwise, I might as well just retire from being a baseball fan, because I'm one of those old-fashioned pitching and defense wins postseason games guys.
It hasn't been
the case thus far.
They're at home as well. So Joe Cahill wrote a piece in Crane's that is fascinating to me about Walgreens and prescription drugs, the business there. You know, Walgreens and Rite Aid, they have their merger. The Walgreens, they had to close, I think, 600 stores? We talked about that last week in order to sort of consolidate. But there are still big challenges down the road when it comes to the prescription drug business, and that could be key to Walgreens' survival.
Yeah, it's a really fascinating analysis from Joe Cahill, who I have to say is, I think, the best business columnist in the city. Every week I look forward to reading him, even if I wasn't working here. And this week he really, you know, goes under the hood of this pharmacy situation, and he sees Amazon is coming in. They're, you know, make a bid to, be a prescription drug provider. They disrupt a lot of industries, as we know. CVS has made a bid for Aetna. They want to take over an insurance company, a health insurance company.
So the idea is that if CVS takes over Aetna, then all the patients insured by Aetna, right, would go to CVS pharmacies to buy their drugs. Huge volume increase for CVS.
Exactly. So, you know, where does that leave Walgreens, right? And there are a couple of interesting paths that that Joe talks about. And one of those is, you know, they could go after an insurer themselves. or they could buy one of these big, prescription benefit managers, the PBMs. Pharmacy benefit manager Express Scripts is something that they could look at acquiring. But what they have done already is they've created a lot of different partnerships, United Health, different insurers. And this may be the path forward. With Amazon coming in, it could get messy to acquire an insurer. Well, Walgreens is open to potentially partnering with Amazon. And if it did, it could not only be the pickup point for a lot of prescriptions via Amazon. So if you were working with them, you could get your prescriptions at Walgreens at one of the many locations, or it could also become a drop-off point for people to pick up packages. Yeah, there are some synergies there.
I want to get to that in a second, but I want to go back first to this idea that these drugstore chains, they need volumes of prescription drug users to come in. They're not going to make their money on Pringles. They're going to make their money on people coming in to get prescriptions and then buying Pringles on the way out, right?
So exactly. They need that combo.
But it seems to me that we're already getting our prescription drugs by mail. I mean, I get to have a couple of prescriptions. I get 3 months supplies in the mail. I don't have to go to Walgreens anymore to get my medicine.
That does seem to be a trend that's picking up. But if you've ever been to Walgreens prescription counter in the Loop, as I was just a couple of days ago, still pretty busy.
Okay, so we got that. And so let's talk about this idea. There's no clue that Amazon would want to partner with Walgreens, but the Walgreens CEO says, that's one of the things they might look at. And so Amazon would get sort of Walgreens prescription infrastructure out of it, and then they'd get their footprint. So, my Whole Foods now, they set up a little desk for Amazon deliveries. The idea is that people could pick up their Amazon-ordered products than at a Walgreens, right?
Right, and there's 450 Whole Foods, and there are 9,000 Walgreens. So it would really supersize the network of pickup points. And the other thing that's kind of lost in this, one of the reasons why it would be difficult maybe to acquire an insurer, there's a lot of regulatory hurdles, a lot of expertise that's required. Well, Walgreens has a lot of expertise in state-level regulatory compliance with pharmacy rules and regulations. So, Amazon could get some help from them on that score as well. So it could make some sense.
Do we know that Amazon wants to get into the prescription drug? I mean, I feel like sometimes Amazon, the Amazon monster's just created. Every time something comes up, Amazon could crush you on that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that there's a definite rollout, but there is, that thought that this could be the next industry they're looking to disrupt. Some of these turn out to be feints in one direction, and they move in another, but it could be an interesting couple of years for this industry.
All right, enough of the serious stuff. I could go for a beer, and I want to pour it myself. I love the story about Tap Solutions. The product is called Pour My Beer. I'm sorry. I lost it a little bit there. This Wheeling company, and they're moving into bars with automatic tap machines. Explain that for me.
So you've been hitting it a little early this morning.
That's like the third episode this hour. I don't know if I'm having mini strokes here or what's going on.
So Pour My Beer rolls out these taps across the country. They have 122 locations nationwide in only its second full year in business. They provide these systems where you buy a card, kind of like you with your kids at an arcade.
Right.
But this is for beer. Hopefully your kids aren't using it to buy Budweiser. But you buy these cards and you slide them into the tap machine. They give you an empty glass, and you select what kind of brew you would like to enjoy.
Let me tell you something, buddy. Back in the 80s, I traveled through the Soviet Union in the mid-80s, and they had beer vending machines there. And it had one glass. So there was a glass where the beer would come out. You'd put your rubles in there. You'd choose beer because that's what they had, and the beer would pour down into the glass. You'd drink it, and then you'd put the glass back.
Yeah, the communal. Well, they figure alcohol kills all germs. Right?
Yeah, well, maybe that or the frigid temperatures. But so I've seen this idea, these wine vending machines, and I know there are a couple of restaurants that tried that. But that's more like a restaurant and a bit of a subdued atmosphere. These guys, the idea is that you'd go to a bar or a tap room, which is featured in the article, and just pour your own.
Yeah, so Navigator Tap Room in Logan Square, which is big on craft beers. They have one of these systems. They have 48 self-operated taps. And the customers purchase the card, then they can get only 4 ounces at a time because they want to encourage beer flights kind of sampling. And they often fill their 95 seats with people who are looking for that beer sampling, that do-it-yourself beer sampling experience.
There's some numbers here in the article. It's written by H. Lee Murphy, but they charge $1,700 per tap handle. Now, Pour My Beer, they say, grosses about $75,000 up front for each client. That seems like a lot of tap handles, but that's the number, $75,000. And then they get $500 a month for maintenance. It seems like a lot of cash, but the bar owners, in exchange, unfortunately, can fire a couple of bartenders, right? They don't have to pay bartenders, and they don't have to worry about bartenders calling in sick.
Yeah, that's true. And the other aspect of it is, I would think on the other side of the coin, is you would need to have a fairly high volume location for this to pencil out, even with the savings that you might get from going robotic.
Right, right, exactly. Because if you didn't have the numbers to pay off, it just wouldn't work. Have you ever tried to tell your troubles to a robot? I don't know if that works, Frank.
They probably listen better than most of the bartenders that I try to chat up.
Well, that might be more about the bartenders than you, because I'm sure all of your stories are very interesting.
I'm sure, Steve. I'm sure. Thank you.
All right. Enjoy the game tonight. We'll talk again next week.
Thanks, Steve.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. When we come back, we're going to check the numbers, traffic, and all of that. And then we'll be joined by Lynn Nieto. She is a proponent for fighting ALS. In a new way, a new business approach to funding the research and organizing the science. Her husband, Augie Nieto, is suffering from ALS. You know him. He's the guy behind Life Cycles, a lot of exercise equipment that I'm sure you have used at one time or another. Lynn Nieto coming up on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Lynn Nieto is in the studio. Lynn is here, who, along with her husband, Augie Nieto, are sort of changing the way we look at ALS and look at research at ALS. Lynn, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Thanks for having me here.
All right, let's start with Augie, obviously. It's all about Augie.
Of course it is.
You've been living with that all your whole life, haven't you?
I have.
I was telling people before that they know Augie Nieto because if they've ridden a Life Cycle or any other sort of equipment that they've bought a gym membership that they didn't use or maybe something in their basement, Augie Nieto is the guy behind that.
Yes, he started Life Fitness when he was in college, 1979, and ran it up until about 15 years ago.
Is that right?
15, 18 years ago.
And it was about, 12 years ago that Augie was diagnosed with ALS?
Yes, that's true.
So tell me about two sort of ungiving forces colliding.
Well, it was horrible. I mean, for obvious reasons, but once you kind of came out of the funk, this entrepreneurial guy looked at the research being done and decided that he needed to tackle this problem like you would a business problem. And that's about the time Augie's Quest was born 12 years ago. And then now as part of the ALS Therapy Development Institute in Cambridge, Massachusetts. And Augie's the chairman of that now.
How is Augie doing today?
He is on a ventilator. He uses his feet to use his computer. He sits on the board of Curves and Ginny Craig and multiple other companies. So he's just, it's a little more slow, but your brain's fine in this disease.
Yeah, it's interesting you use the word slow because I was going to say this is a silly question, but has he slowed down? And physically, I guess he has.
Physically, yes. But that being said, he's back working out 9 hours a week with special trainers and has rebuilt some of the muscles that are still attached. And
wow.
So he's the same guy. He's just, struggles with a few more physical things now.
So let's go back to the Life Cycle. So he kind of redesigned the way we exercise or the way we approach it, right?
Yes.
And maybe that's the same goal when it comes to ALS, the way we look at it, the way we fund the research, the way we organize the research. Tell me about that.
Well, and part of what's really neat and heartwarming in this situation is all these bitter competitors in the fitness industry have rallied behind us. And they're the reason we've gotten so far.
Is that right?
Yeah. And, they're part of the reason, but they're the biggest part of
but
the reason.
Were you surprised in 2005 when the diagnosis came through the way the research was organized or done? I mean, did it
was sad.
Really?
It's really sad because it's all – everybody's sitting in their little silos and they don't want to collaborate while people die in 2 to 5 years. Well, that makes absolutely no sense.
And you have changed that?
We have. At the Institute, we're looking at something that will slow down the progression. We actually have a drug that will be in phase one trials in Q1 of next year. Money willing, we'll have it in phase two trials in ALS patients in Q3.
And so did that speed it up? I mean, I just wonder if the structure of the research, if it really took something like Augie to change the way things happen.
Yes, I think we've shown that it's not an incurable disease. It's just underfunded. And what the ability of having raised $110 million over the last 12 years, that's given us the ability to move things forward. And we've got a plan in place at the Institute. If we had this windfall of money tomorrow, we know what we're going to do with it.
And so there's a film out, Augie, a documentary.
Yes.
And that I know there's a screening, a private screening in Chicago tonight. It's going to be shown in L.A. in New York. Will people have a chance
to? In the first quarter of next year. Okay. So we'll have a theatrical release then and hope to have a distribution deal by then.
And the idea there is it tells the story, raises awareness, but also some funding as well.
That's our hope behind it. So it's an uplifting, hopeful documentary.
Uplifting and hopeful are the two difficult words, I would think, for you. I mean, Augie's facing a terminal disease.
Yes, he is.
But you've maintained your hope and your optimistic spirit.
We have. I think there is a reason to have hope today. Yeah. We didn't 12 years ago.
And it's changed just because of the momentum there.
There is momentum.
It's become a little bit of a therapy, right?
I suppose. Yeah. Yeah, tiring therapy, yes.
Exhausting therapy. Well, a lot of people in therapy think it is. So if people want to help or learn more, where do they go? How do they
go? If you go to www.augiequest, and it's A-U-G-I-E, quest.org.
Augie Quest, okay. Can I, something a little personal, and it's just a great coincidence, but one of my best friends in childhood, a kid named Joe Bouchard, he grew up, he was the better basketball player, baseball player, and he married another childhood friend of mine, Chris. And Chris has been diagnosed with ALS, and Chris is confined to a wheelchair now, and I'm just learning about all of this. And Lynn, as you came in, I found out that they're having a fundraiser for Chris November 18th, and I don't usually do this, but if you're in Manteno and at the Manteno Sportsman's Club on November 18th, you can help a family there, just like you, Lynn, and Augie have helped so many others.
Yes, yes, that's great.
Thank you very much for coming by.
Thank you.
I wish you great success for all of us. Thank you very much.
Thank you.